Films back in the day, Vinny.
They were good ones.
I think we used that for
Did I mention, by the way, I cleaned my house and brought some stuff over. One of them was a copy of Get My Keys.
Really?
Yeah.
On VHS?
No, on DVD.
Really? You brought it over?
Mm-hmm. It's down your dining room right now. I forgot about it until you mentioned.
I have to go watch that thing. Still not as good as Kill That Mole. That was our masterpiece.
Kill the Mole was the peak.
I'll just see if Tony's got that somewhere. All right, everybody. It is the Brian and Vinny Show here for May 29th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff today. We've got Raw, obviously. And we've got Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, the best show of the week by far.
Yeah.
And if Vinny would like to do SmackDown, I will allow him to do so, even though I have not, in fact, seen SmackDown. So I am unfit to comment on anything.
I will just say that for the first time, two things, maybe three things. For the first time in a long time, SmackDown seemed like a relevant show. They established a number one contender for the pay-per-view. Big Show came out and cut a promo that moved that angle along, and the Daniel Bryan Kane feud, something happened there. Specifically, Bryan attacked him with a chair a lot. Presumably, I thought there would be a payoff on Raw, and I was mistaken. Well, there was a little bit of a payoff on Raw.
Well, the payoff comes on SmackDown this week.
I see.
And it's not a good one.
Great. Oh, they're making a freeway.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. But the point is, usually SmackDown is just 2 hours where a bunch of stuff happens, and it's usually all okay to watch, but at the end, you're right where you started. So,
well, luckily for you, this is probably going to be a permanent change. They have not officially abolished the brand extension. And actually, I think they probably believe the brand extension is still in full effect.
Sure.
But as noted in the Daily Update today, John Cena is now being sent to SmackDown to do shows. And Kane and Punk are having a world title match on the show this Friday. And everything is going to basically play into everything else. So what happens on Raw will be concluded or continued on SmackDown, which will then be continued or concluded on Raw. Going to see a fair number of guys are just going to be working both shows. Pretty much exactly as I expected would happen as soon as they started moving SmackDown guys to Raw. Made the entire idea of a draft irrelevant. They were going to do the draft in April. It's now May. They talked about doing it in June. It's now the end of May. There's been a no announcement. I don't think there's going to be a draft this year. So, anyway, for those of you that were sick of the brand extension, lucky you! And thank God they did a big angle to blow the whole thing off. So
yes.
There you go.
So the other two notes on SmackDown.
Well, why don't you tell us what happened on SmackDown?
All right, I'll breeze through it quick. They did one of those segments where a bunch of guys come out and argue why they should get a title shot. Alberto just his argument was that he was sucking up to Eve and calling her beautiful repeatedly. Orton's case was that people liked him. Kane's argument was that this was SmackDown number 666.
Mm.
These were their debates. So Eve booked a triple threat. Christian beat Hunico quickly. Cody came out and said, quote, "Nobody cares about that title." True. His point was that nobody cared about it because Christian held it, which is false, but yes, nobody cares about the Intercontinental title. Usos and Titus O'Neil and Darren Young had another fun short match. The wacky video backstage of the two teams making fun of each other. O'Neil and Young won. Sin Cara's back next week.
That's awesome, by the way.
Which part?
It's the fact that O'Neil and Young were winning matches, and then they decided to beat them,
yeah.
And now they're winning again.
They're It's their schizophrenic, we want to push tag teams, no we don't booking.
I see.
There are champions. There are no worthy challengers. So they have the team that just lost a title match. In fact, both the two teams that have lost title matches recently, well, one of them apparently is splitting up and the other is just going to keep winning, I guess. Sin Cara is back next week. Ryback beat two geeks. Ryback had a giant black eye. They were explaining that the other guy looked even worse. And the highlight of this was Ryback's move, the Samoan drop or Fishman suplex, whatever you want to call it. He picked up both these two geeks and hit him with it at the same time. It was cool. Hmm. We had Santino versus Ricardo in the best match I saw all week. Do you like Looney Tunes? This was Bugs Bunny versus Daffy Duck, and I loved it.
Well, another interesting fact. So they did that match on SmackDown. I was talking about this on the Observer show yesterday. They did that match on SmackDown, and Santino beats the guy clean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is, in fact, going to lead to another series of matches between these two.
Of course.
It is starting with the babyface getting a clean win, and is likely going to lead to a championship match.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Hey, you know what? Great. That entertained me.
These two men are probably fighting for the championship at No Way Out.
Fine. Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Can you imagine if, like, they didn't do this. I was wanting them to do this with AJ and Daniel Bryan, but they didn't do it. Where Daniel Bryan's world champion, and he loses the title, and AJ wins the women's title. So then he has no belt, and she does. So I think it'd be awesome if, at the pay-per-view, Alberto Del Rio is a world heavyweight title match. He loses, and Ricardo wins the U.S. title, and he is the champion of the duo.
Yes.
There's a lot of comedy that could be done with this, and I'm afraid they're too stupid to figure that out.
Yes.
Hopefully I'm wrong.
Sheamus came out. He was supposed to apologize to Big Show, or excuse me, apologize to Laurinaitis for bumping him. He basically refused. He wrestled Swagger. He had a fun TV match. And Sheamus won. Duh. They're not that stupid. We had Damian Sandow versus Yoshitatsu. I thought Damian's promo this week was great. He was passionate. He was still very intelligent and had a lot to say. He called Yoshi a dunce and an ignoramus, but basically said that despite he couldn't stop himself and they had to do the match this week. He won a very quick squash, looked good in the process. Then afterwards, he celebrated by doing a cartwheel, which they showed in slow motion replay. There's a lot of leaping Lanny Poffo in this act, but I enjoyed this.
This I gotta see.
Yes. So, Show came out and cut his promo about how he felt betrayed by the fans and by the other wrestlers. Finally, he said he didn't care about him and he left. Now, he cuts this promo. It's a fairly long promo. And then as he's leaving, Kane comes out, his pyro goes off, and they cross paths on the aisle, and they glance at each other, but then just keep going, two giant ships passing the night. So I figured this segment was over, and I began to fast forward. Much later, I realized that Daniel Bryan had attacked Kane here. I had to go back and watch. Mm. Too much going on. So Bryan hit him with a chair a bunch. He was the biggest star on the show by far. And the main event triple threat, Kane versus Orton versus Del Rio. It was pretty fun. Bryan came out again. Kane chased him away. Kane was distracted and ate an RKO, but then Del Rio stole the pin. And then Sheamus jumped.
Somebody stole a pin in a three-way?
It's true.
I've never even heard of such a finish.
It's true. And then Del Rio was celebrating and Sheamus jumped him from behind. So, like I say, SmackDown felt like it mattered.
Well, I guess I'll have to watch that show when I get a chance. Let's play a quick song and then we'll talk about things that I actually have seen with my own two eyes. This is from, I don't know who it's from. Tiger. What a coincidence. A tiger.
And I'll bet you that those darn slugs ate up all my plants.
Oh, those dang slugs. In Puyallup, which is where Craig lives, there was a tiger on the loose today. Are you aware of this?
I was.
No.
Yeah, there was a tiger on the loose.
Hey, guys.
Yes?
My neighbor told me that his dog saw a coyote out here in my backyard.
Hold on a second.
And Jeff Connor wants to know what my favorite drink is when the weather gets hot. A beer!
How about that?
That was fun.
All right. I guess we must talk about Raw. I thought Raw was fine.
I don't have any giant complaints.
A lot of people hated the show a hell of a lot more than I did.
I hated it last week.
There's a lot to hate about Raw lately, so when you see a show that's not horrible, my
standards,
celebrate.
My standards have dropped so far.
Celebrate, everybody.
But when the show is over, if I could think, if I don't think I want those 2 hours back, that's a win. Just don't waste my time. And I didn't feel like it was tremendously wasting my time. It was Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice, solemn, respectful tribute video. Big Show came out. They are referring to his latest heel turn, his annual turn. The company line is the darkest day in WWE history.
That is a horrible tagline.
Now, putting aside the legitimately dark days, they're annoying. Here's what happened, everyone. There's this guy, and he punched someone else.
Yeah.
That's the darkest day in WWE history.
Well, he allowed John Laurinaitis to remain on television, Vinny.
No, that's not good. So he started talking about what a badass he was and how no football player could hang with him or basketball player or, quote, phony UFC so-called fighter.
Yeah.
I LOL'd. He showed video. He talked about how he had to beg for his job and then got fired. And he showed video of Brodus and Kofi and Truth dancing with children, and then Cena being terribly annoying. This is all very effective in making Big Show look like a sympathetic character. The man had a solid point about what assholes the babyfaces on Raw are. He vowed to knock Cena out of the pay-per-view.
I thought the Big Show was awesome.
He has been great lately. Yeah.
Big Show is a great babyface, and he is a great heel. And he is great. He's just great.
He really is.
I watched this show. I spent Memorial Day at the beach, and Whitney was there, and her sister, and my buddy Dan, and they all sat and watched the show with me. They actually had books, but they looked up here and there to watch the show, and thank God the show was all right. If this had been your usual boring or annoying Raw show, or hideous Raw show, I would have just been...
Humiliated
for two straight hours.
Yeah.
And there were certainly things. When they showed the clips of John Cena being annoying, to a person, everybody in the room just said, that's the most annoying guy I've ever seen. And I was like, yeah, I don't get it either. But they all were fascinated by the Big Show. They thought he was great. And I agree with them. Maybe that's not the reaction you want from a casual fan to think, man, what a sympathetic fella this big giant is. But at least they didn't think it was bad. They enjoyed it. So thumbs up to that segment from the Peanut Gallery.
We had Santino versus Alberto. This continues
another hit.
The best feud ever, Santino versus Ricardo, because you see, after getting his ass kicked in a fair fight, Ricardo is now the cowardly playground punk who went and got his big brother to fight for him.
Mm-hmm.
Alberto tapped him out in a minute, tore the Cobra off his arm, and Ricardo got down on his hands and knees to scream Alberto's name in Santino's face. Thumbs up!
Now, granted, they may as well get rid of this title.
Sure. I have said this for like 5 years.
This is a perfectly fine feud and perfectly fine heel psychology.
Alex Riley was sucking up to Eve backstage. Show interrupted.
Remember when Alex Riley had a Twitter and he decided to make a new Twitter, but someone took over his old Twitter?
I didn't until right now.
And
there's something in there about how he either was or wanted to bang Eve.
Yes, exactly. And it was a big scandal for about
an
hour until everybody figured out that's not really Alex Riley's account.
I just
but it was a hilarious hack.
Yes.
I thought of that immediately when I saw this segment.
So Riley was afraid that Sho would pick him to wrestle. Sho said, relax, I'm not going to wrestle you.
I believe he said something about his... created a painting.
It was graphic, yes.
And then the very next tweet...
He made a mess.
The very next tweet was, how do you delete a tweet?
Yeah.
It's so awesome. Anyway.
That was more entertaining than this segment. Sho said he was not going to wrestle Riley, then he threw him into a wall just to be mean. Yeah, Truth and Kofi versus Dolphin Swagger, and the star of this segment, Vicky Guerrero's dress. It was hideous. Even Lawler was bearing it compared to King Tut. They had a very basic tag match, but the crowd in New Orleans, who was awesome pretty much all night.
Speaking of dresses, by the way, since you had mentioned Eve, as soon as she came on television, Whitney's sister knew exactly where she'd got her dress.
Really?
Yeah, I was fascinated.
Is it? I hope it's not like, hope it's not Ross.
I don't think it was
Target.
I don't think it was Kmart.
Yeah.
But she mentioned the place. Anyway, go on.
Good. So, Truth pinned Swagger with the pay dirt, or whatever he calls it. Match was fine, but the crowd, they overreacted to it, frankly, but that's good. Crowd was awesome. The heels all yelled at each other afterwards, and Dolph walked out, saying he was better than this, which is an arguable point.
You know, by the way, whenever we have the ongoing argument with people that explain that, oh, they never changed their minds about anything, this is just a cover for Dave and Brian getting his story wrong.
I don't have this argument, only you do, but go ahead.
Well, I got to bring it up every time this happens, the old plans change argument. Whatever happened to Abraham Washington representing Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger?
Was that even hinted at?
Yes, it was. They did they began the storyline on Raw a couple of weeks ago. It has now completely been dropped because, in fact, they changed their minds.
I don't even remember. All right, whatever. Sho ran into Santino backstage. He squeezed Santino's face and asked him if this is funny. This was actually really, really awesome because Santino is, of course, a clown. And he was helpless here. All he could do is whimper pathetically. And Big Sho came off like a giant scary monster, which he is, and which is the point. So Brodus Clay interrupted. This is the guy Sho had highlighted earlier as dancing seconds after he had been fired. So Brodus dared Sho to pick him. Sho obliged, and they threatened each other, and it was fine. Had a promo with Laurinaitis, Otunga, and Eve, where they booked Cena versus Sho in a steel cage match, conveniently at a Sho entitled No Way Out. Laurinaitis announced he was the most popular star in WWE history. He was mucking up his words so badly that Cole and Lawler were both openly laughing at him. They showed Laurinaitis' face on the cover of the new video game. Laurinaitis claimed he would be bigger than Pac-Man. I laughed. And Punk interrupted. He put his gum on Laurinaitis' scooter. Cole started screaming about this, and Lawler said, quote, don't stooge him off. I laughed at that, too. Point of all this is that Punk is on the cover of the new video game. He had a great tweet later in the evening where he said something along the lines of, take that, King Slender.
Mm.
I laughed. We had Punk and Brian. Had a match. Pretty good. Not in the same universe as their pay-per-view match. And AJ came out, all dressed up in Punk gear, totally flirting with him. She's a lovely young lady. So she distracted the ref and Punk. This allowed Brian to tear the turnbuckle pad off. He threw Punk into it and pinned him. So Brian wins. Then Kane showed up. He laid out Brian with a chair. He went after Punk, but AJ fed Punk a chair, and he fought Kane off. It's a very strange feud, and I'm hoping that somehow, when all is said and done, they're painting AJ as the crazy chick. She needs to be so crazy that she ends up with Kane.
I was just going to say.
That would make this awesome. That would be a great pair.
But of course, you know, if they do that, that means she's going to help Kane win the championship.
Well, that's no buys.
That can't happen.
No. That's a terrible idea. Let him win the girl. Nothing wrong with that. We have a segment here where I will read my notes verbatim. Christian versus Miz with Cody on commentary. Cody got bored and walked out halfway through. Christian won with the frog splash in 2 or 3 minutes.
I missed anything. That does it.
All right. There was an awful backstage segment with Laurinaitis, Otunga, Eve, and Teddy. God, Laurinaitis was awful here. And then he threatened to retire in 10 or 20 years. He had Miz still in the ring, whining about crap. Orton came out and RKO'd him. Dolph and Vicky were watching backstage, and Dolph said he had to get out of his tag team. This was like something went terribly, terribly short, and they grabbed the three closest people, Dolph, Orton, and Miz, and said, go do something to fill time.
Well, no, this is actually, this all worked out perfectly, because Orton sent Miz packing to the movie that they wanted Orton to do, but were forced to have Miz do it. And Dolph Ziggler made the comment about Orton because Dolph Ziggler will be facing Orton at the pay-per-view as a replacement for Chris Jericho.
I see.
Who has been suspended for defacing a flag.
I see.
Yeah. So actually all worked out just fine, in fact.
We had another Memorial Day video.
By the way, guess who I saw in Vegas?
Frank Mir.
Well, I did see him, yes. But
I went.
I saw... I already forgot his name.
Dana White.
Not Todd Pettengill.
Todd Martin?
The other dingbat that did interviews on this show.
Gene Okerlund?
I had the glasses, black hair.
Oh.
Skinny.
He's on ESPN now.
Yeah. Anyway, point is.
That one guy.
What the hell's his name? It's infuriating.
Was it Todd?
It's not Todd. It was...
He was...
It was Todd Grisham.
We once referred to him strictly as that cocksucker from the Benoit DVD.
Todd Grisham. Anyway, he's there, and he is now working for ESPN doing the MMA Live, I believe it's called. But if you remember all those videos where he's like the skinny little geek backstage interviewing the big, tough wrestlers?
Mm-hmm.
He's like 6'2".
Yeah.
He was enormous. Flabbergasted.
Sorry, dude. I don't know what to tell you. David Otunga wrestled. It was against Sheamus. He got way too much offense, and it was no good, and Sheamus won. It was at this point I realized the last half hour of Raw had done nothing. It was not a great show. And the main event was Show versus Brodus Clay. As Show came out, he began to cut a promo, and just as he began to speak, the two-hour mark passed. So clearly not much is going to happen here. He compared Brodus to a clown, specifically Doink. Nobody cared about Doink in 2012. Big Show had said that Doink had talent, which is true. It was Matt Bourne. So Show attacked Brodus, beat him up a lot. The girls were in the ring crying. Kofi and Truth came out to make the save. Show beat them all up for a long time, and that was it.
That's about it.
Uninspiring.
It was a good...
It made sense. I mean, they made the giant scary guy look like a giant scary guy, so it's impressive when Cena beats him in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was a nice show long storyline.
And they
story
can wrestle
line.
Again, so... Yeah.
Good show long storyline to create a monster heel for a match that we have seen approximately 16,000 times. Yes. So anyway, that was Raw, everyone. We've got a special song here, but I'm going to play it at the end.
This is the one I sent you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody did some work.
Vinny demanded I play the song, and I listened to a little bit of it, and I have agreed.
I've only listened to the first, 15 seconds and agreed. This needs to be aired on the show.
So we're going to play that after our special report here, our breaking news update. On Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling from September 22nd,
30 years ago.
1982. You know, this show took place about a month after Roddy Piper was stabbed by the fan.
Did not know that.
Yeah, I think it was at the Greensboro Coliseum.
This explains why you were asking about the date over and over and over again.
Yes. He was in a stairwell and a fan was upset and stabbed him with a penknife in the hand and the chest. That's back in the day, everybody. That's some real heat. Not that I encourage things like that to happen, of course, but No one dislikes anybody like that anymore.
Yeah, no, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's very
I don't
good
want Dolph Ziggler stabbed in a stairwell.
I don't want anyone stabbed either.
They did their best promos ever list this week or whatever. And Punk on Twitter said that it was a joke that Piper was not number one. And someone else replied something, and Punk said, clearly you never saw his Portland stuff. Which immediately I thought, I don't know why this surprised me, but finding old Portland stuff is hard because so much of it was destroyed. But I was inspired. I Googled a Roddy Piper Portland promo, and there's one where he breaks a beer bottle over his head. His own head, mind you. It's not even opened, and beer goes flying everywhere, and then blood pours down his face as he threatens his opponents. And Rick Martel is just standing there, gobsmacked. So yes, Piper was insane.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd personally say that Rowdy Roddy Piper is the greatest promo in the history of wrestling.
I certainly would not say he was the best because he broke a bottle over his head. I would say he was the craziest.
He was very good. He was excellent. He was awesome. But I would not call him the best promo guy of all time. That's just me. So anyway, let's talk about this show.
Show opened with a match in progress. It was Mike Davis versus Dory Funk Jr. And they explained that Dory Funk had just returned to the territory and to drum up attention or make a name for himself.
He didn't shave his head.
That too. But he was offering $100,000 to anyone who could beat him.
Mm-hmm.
They actually had a check there made out to Mike Davis for that dollar amount if he could win. But Dory won and took the check back. So, yeah, it was not much to it. Dory, as we were discussing, he had the same balding pattern that Shawn Michaels has. And Shawn has...
just much worse.
Much, much worse. And he never shaved that one patch of hair on his forehead. He actually grew it out. So it was waving back and forth down over his eyes.
This was very unfortunate.
Yeah. Fortunately, his wrestling was excellent. And
it's kind of funny how time passes and people realize the error of their ways. For example, you don't see a lot of mullets anymore. And when you do, they're on awesome men like Roy Nelson. But now people start going bald and it's like, oh, shave all my head off. Because my hair looks terrible.
Yes.
Some people thought back then. They were like, my hair's falling out, so I'm going to...
I'll just grow what I have.
I'm going to grow out all the rest of it.
Not even as a comb over, mind you.
No.
Just grow out the hair I have.
Now, I've spoken many times about the ridiculous sums of money that sometimes we see on these programs.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's one thing for Sheamus to be fined $500,000. I mean, it's idiotic, but it's more believable than if someone at TNA were fined that amount of money. But I wouldn't even care so much about Dory offering $100,000 if not for the fact that later on in the same program, there was an interview with Wahoo McDaniel, and he's talking about Sergeant Slaughter, I believe, defacing his headdress, I believe it was. But regardless, whatever the crime that had been committed, Sergeant Slaughter was suspended for 4 weeks, just like Chris Jericho, in fact. In fact, there's quite a tie-in here now that I think about it. He defaced a sacred article and got a 30-day suspension. And unfortunately, Jericho is going to be losing a lot more money because he's off of pay-per-view. But, Wahoo explained that in addition to the suspension, Slaughter had been fined $1,000. And that hurts you, said Wahoo. And I was like, really, $1,000? We just had, at the beginning of this show, there's a gimmick where a guy is offering $100,000 if he can be pinned by Mr. Rock and Roll RPM here. And now Wahoo's talking about $1,000 really took a bite out of Slaughter's pocketbook. So I wasn't so sold on that $100,000 purse.
Then the show became awesome as Jimmy Valiant arrived.
I got one more thing to say, actually.
Really?
Yes. In that Dory Funk Jr. match, he pretty much destroyed Mike Davis. I think Mike Davis got one or two near falls, but wasn't even really near. It was just...
it was a two count.
Yes, two count. And after he was roundly defeated, they claimed that yes, he had come within, quote, an eyelash! of winning $100,000.
That was a lie.
That was a blatant mistruth.
Yeah. So, Jimmy Valiant arrived. I had forgotten this, but the last time we watched Mid-Atlantic, the dastardly heels, you know, we've seen lots of, there's been lots of angles in wrestling where someone has had a precious item that's been stolen or destroyed. Wahoo's headdress, a sacred Native American headdress, was just destroyed in a savage act by heels. Kurt Angle would have his Olympic gold medals stolen.
Mm-hmm.
In Mid-Atlantic in 1982, heels broke Jimmy Valiant's boombox.
Yes, his radio, he called it.
No, well, that too, but more importantly, they took away his music.
They took away, the day the music died.
He had no music, and so he said he had not slept in 72 hours.
Now, I brought this up to you that he had had his music destroyed, and you didn't remember this. And in fact, it appears, unless my memory is failing, which of course I've got the memory
of an
elephant.
Wasn't it in studio last time?
That's right. Last time his music was destroyed, it was in studio. And this music-destroying episode was at a live event.
Yes.
So apparently, whenever someone needed to get heat on Valiant, they just kept breaking his radio.
He's got a new one and it kept getting broken.
But I guess it took, like, maybe they didn't sell radios in stores back in 1983. He had to mail order it. Because apparently it took a long time to get a new damn radio.
I hadn't thought of that, but yes.
He had slept in 72 hours, he said, because they destroyed his radio. Well, he didn't go to a store?
Didn't you go to a Kmart or a Radio Shack?
I didn't have a K. Maybe I've got a Kmart.
Maybe they had a Kmart in 82.
I'm sure they had a Radio Shack, because the Radio Shack down the road here is still in 1982.
Radio Shacks are amazing places.
And they sure are.
How have they survived?
Because of people like Jimmy Valiant.
I guess. Jimmy Valiant wrestled Jim Dalton. You immediately remember Jim Dalton. I didn't. He's a Mid-Atlantic jobber from the early 80s.
Yeah.
So, Valiant...
They stick with me.
Valiant beat him up, pinned him with an elbow smash, and then he leapt to his feet. He tore off his do-rag, and all I can say is that he began to shudder. And he burned significantly more calories standing there shuddering than he did actually wrestling. And he, by the way, he did not wrestle in a lazy, half-assed manner.
No, it's quite a...
He moves all the time, and he is perpetual motion, and then when he got really excited, he moved at double speed.
Yeah.
But it was after he wrestled someone. Jimmy Valiant is amazing.
He's an amazing
He is a spectacle every time he's on TV. We had Private Nelson versus Jay Youngblood. He explained that Sergeant Slaughter had sent urgent correspondence to Private Kernodle, calling him to join him in Japan. So Private Nelson was alone this week. Basically, this was a long, boring squash, except at the end, the squash victim escaped the finisher, made a comeback, and won. G. Youngblood sold. It was probably about 2.5 minutes. It seemed like days. And then he escaped the Cobra Clutch, fired up, hit a bunch of stiff chops, and won with a jumping double axe handle to a prone opponent.
Yes, it was awesome.
It was actually a pretty cool move. Someone could bring this back immediately.
Private Nelson went from a military man to Boris Zhukov.
That's
evil
right.
Evil Russian.
That's right.
Yeah.
That explains why this is one-sided and boring. We had a... Oh, and the other thing you have to mention here. The world has changed since 1982. Jay Youngblood, much like Wahoo, much like, well, a lot of guys in Mid-Atlantic, Native American man. And as he was selling, the crowd wanted to fire him up. They didn't do so by chanting, "Go, Jay, go." They didn't chant Youngblood. They didn't even do the tomahawk chop. No, they did the high-pitched woo-woo-woo Indian war cry.
I ain't going to try it.
I'm not even going to either. But yeah, they try to fire up Youngblood with a racist chant.
You know, when they first started doing that, I was like, oh my God, this is horrifying. And then about a minute later, he started doing a stereotypical war dance.
Yeah.
I was like, eh, well.
Wrestling, I think I told the story before. But the last time our buddy Rodney was in town, he put on some classics, and Kamala was on TV. And it didn't even occur to me. I've just been around. I've been watching wrestling all my life. I've been watching Kamala, frankly, most of my life. So it didn't even occur to me this might be offensive at all. And then the announcer from World Class explained that Kamala was from, quote, the Dark Continent. Then I felt horrible.
Yeah, but I'm actually going to justify this.
All right.
I think they were talking about an absence of light.
I'm sure they were.
Deepest, darkest Africa. As famous saying.
Yeah?
All these jungles that obscure the light of day.
And yet everything I've seen about Africa, I understand it's very sunny there.
Well,
it is on the equator.
The continent's very large, Vinny. I'm not sure if you've noticed.
There's a lot of Africa out there.
Substantial landmass. So there are parts of Africa that are deep and dark.
Hmm.
Yeah. But the Dark Continent was, in fact, a poor choice of words.
That would not fly in 2012.
No.
They would say he's from Africa. And then the man with the belly paint and the spear would go on, not knowing how to pin men. Back to the Mid-Atlantic here. Keith Larson cut a promo.
Which, by the way,
I wish to God.
Hold on a second. The whole idea that you took this man out of the Dark Continent, and presumably you had to teach him how to, I guess it was probably easier back then to get through the airports, but, you know, he had to, I mean, I presume that he was able to dress himself when he wasn't in a grass skirt. I presume he didn't go to Radio Shack in a grass skirt, but you're able to domesticate, for lack of a better term, this fella to that degree, but you can't teach him how to pin a man?
He can't understand comprehend the difference between face
front
up and
back?
Face down, yes. This is too much for Kamala to comprehend. He
That's
merely attacks.
Offensive. That's offensive to me.
Well, yes. No, it's offensive to me. Keith Larson promos.
No! Keith Larson is the best thing on this goddamn
Keith
show.
Keith Larson, we must find a... I only found clips of his matches.
I actually learned a lot about Keith Larson this evening. He was, in fact, the brother of Don Kernodle.
That explains a little.
And believe it or not, Keith Larson, I don't know if he's still wrestling, but...
I don't see why he couldn't be.
There are independent groups down in the Mid-Atlantic, and there are records of him wrestling as late as 2006.
I have no trouble believing that.
Yeah.
He was very young here. He's a handsome man. And but there's nothing he was doing here he cannot do in
there,
it.
There's
today.
Something about his interviews that just intrigue me. He's so...
stoned.
No, that's not the word I'm looking for. He's so... He's got so much... I don't even know how to explain
anti-charisma?
Not only that, but he's like... He's really into what he's talking about. He's very thoughtful.
Really? That's your impression?
Yes, and he makes sure to hit all of the points.
I would get the impression that he puts absolutely no thought into these at all.
I bet he put a lot of thought into it.
This one, he appeared to just list a bunch of wrestlers. All the wrestlers he could think of at the top of his head.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about the feuds other men were in, talked about Jimmy's radio, and what Greg Valentine was up to.
I mean,
to.
Don't get me wrong, this interview would never fly today.
Brian, this is not a good interview. This would not be a good interview in 2012. This is not a good interview in 1982. This will not be a good interview in 2052. This has not been a good interview at any point since man climbed out of the
Come
trees.
On. Come on. You're not giving the man enough credit. He Brian. Was a young...
I gotta find one.
You want me to find one?
Yes.
God damn
Play
it.
Play a Keith Larson promo. That's not a different Keith Larson. Although, it would be funny if Keith Larson was now an American radio host, a conservative political commentator. In Charlotte, mind you.
Maybe he has. Let me see what I can find here. I can't believe you've forced me to do this. All right. I don't know if a lot of people have bothered putting Keith Larson promos on the YouTube.
Yeah, I find matches only.
In fact, it's not looking good. Yeah, there ain't much. You may be out of luck, my man.
Great Kabuki versus Keith Larson. Good match with the legendary Great Kabuki. Yeah, it's wrestling. The wrestling is fine.
You ain't going to find it, homie.
Yeah.
Move along.
He's the worst promo I ever saw.
Oh, the worse than Laurinaitis?
Well, he is
really, think about this for a
while.
He
is so bad it is funny, whereas Laurinaitis is better, but that just makes him more boring.
So that means Keith Larson is a superior
promo. I would rather watch
promo.
A Keith Larson promo.
So there you go. There's your answer.
He loops back around and becomes funny. But yes, he has, his voice is capable of exactly one note. And he, as I noted, he puts no thought into his promos. He just says things as they pop into his mind. At least this time, last time we saw this man, Bob Caudle just left him on the vine to wither and die. This time, Caudle was trying his damnedest to keep Larson on track, and he was working to help Larson get to a point.
Yeah.
And he failed.
He tried.
There was no point there. I did like when Larson said, he started talking about Greg Valentine and his figure four, and to put you in the figure four, he's got to wire his opponent down.
Now, hold on. Before we even go any further, when we're on the subject of Keith Larson is awesome, is awful, or whatever you want to call him promos, I think they're fine. I think they're acceptable. I don't think it's the worst promo of all time. But you find his promos worse than number one Paul Jones?
Yes.
Really? Because Paul Jones absolutely sucked on this show.
Oh, well, yeah. He sucked so bad that at the end, oh, I'll get to it, but...
Go on.
The House of Humperdinck, all the guys took turns cutting a promo, and at the end, when I was listing them, I had forgotten Paul Jones had even come out. So, Paul Jones was a poor promo, don't get me wrong. But Keith Larson, I said it earlier, he appeared to be highly, 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 highly medicated.
I just think he's just a young, fresh-faced...
Simpleton?
I don't like using that word.
Yokel?
That's a terrible thing to call him. He's just a young, fresh-faced wrestler.
Just soft-spoken.
Little wet behind the ears.
Inexperienced green guy?
Yeah.
Doesn't have much to say?
Doesn't have nothing to say.
Just talks about Wahoo, McDaniels, and Greg Valentine. And
we called him McDaniels.
Don Kernodle, and Sergeant Slaughter.
It's great.
Jay Youngblood. Hey, you did that for 5 minutes.
That was awesome.
Thank you. So then he wrestled. He had just spent at one of the notes.
A fine jobber.
One of the things he talked about with Bob Caudle was how he had to avoid Greg Valentine's figure four. He failed to avoid the figure four. Greg Valentine beat him up and won. It was totally fine. Keith Larson as a wrestler was totally fine. It's just his promos that I object to. Fortunately, then this became the best show ever when he got a second Jimmy Valiant promo.
I didn't notice this the first time, but they showed a replay of when his radio was destroyed. Uh-huh. It was, first off, it was smashed over his head to lead to the pinfall, and then it was smashed against the post, and it was busted into a million pieces. And when the radio was destroyed, the fans began pelting the ring with garbage.
Yes.
They were so outraged. They were so outraged that... Joe LeDuc had the temerity to destroy the radio. It was awesome.
This got significantly more heat than Chris Jericho debasing a flag, or whatever he did. So, Jimmy Valiant was here to cut his second promo of the show. He was carrying a scrap of his radio around as part of the speaker. And he ranted again about how upset he was. Then he, like, ran away. Wahoo McDaniel was standing there the entire time. Big, giant feathered headdress on, arms crossed, very stoic. And Valiant runs away, and so Caudle turns to Wahoo and asks, boy, Jimmy sure is upset, isn't he? And Wahoo's begins to speak, and you can tell he's thinking, it's just a fucking radio. But he explains that he'd be pretty upset if you messed with his golf clubs or his headdress or his car.
Mm.
His car, he said, that he drives around in.
Not the car he just has a display in the front yard.
Wahoo was so great on this show.
Wahoo was awesome.
Wahoo ruled. So, yeah. He had Mike Rotundo versus Ali Bay.
Ali Bay.
That's A-L-I space B-E-Y.
Now, there were two Ali Bays. This is not the Ali Bay that was reportedly born in 1911. Although, in doing a little bit of research, the Ali Bay that supposedly was born in 1911, a Turkish grappler... who claimed to have been undefeated in professional wrestling, a claim that I find to be most likely non-factual. I don't know the best way to put it.
Fictional?
I don't want to call the man a liar. But anyway.
You liar.
Claim he was born in 1911, but there's a Turkish article talking about how he's celebrating his 100th birthday from 2004. So some of this timeline is not correct here.
Maybe the Turks have a different calendar.
As far as I know, the old Ali Bey is still alive, as is the Ali Bey that was on this show. But he was not 80 on this program, to the best of my knowledge.
So what we had here was...
He's a good worker.
Well, it took us a long time to establish his name. I actually had to look up the date of the show and do some research. But I described him as a short, squat, bald, barefoot man. And there with Mike Rotundo, who had his perm.
He was a classic, short, fat wrestling jobber. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of...
He was very old school in that he had to growl with every move he made. Much like, if you remember, Iron Mike Sharp from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Just making noise constantly. So, Mike Rotundo was, the amateur wrestling guy. He went for a Kimura repeatedly.
That's right, standing Kimura.
And eventually won with the airplane spin into the FU.
Into the FU!
If only he had known what he had with that move.
I'll say.
He could have really made something of himself. We had a promo with Ken Timms and Bill White.
Bill White. I know everyone's going to make the weatherman comparisons.
Anchorman,
I'm sorry. Same thing.
First of all, first I thought he looked like Ron Burgundy. And the more I looked at him, the more I realized he looked like John C. Reilly playing Ron Burgundy.
He looks exactly like Kyle Kingsbury.
But maybe that's true, too.
For those of you that saw the UFC event this weekend, he looked absolutely dead on, except for the body, because Kyle Kingsbury
works out
all jacked up. But from the neck up, exactly dead ringer for Kyle Kingsbury this weekend. So, and he was there with Ken Timms, who went on to become Fabuloso Blondie in Mexico for a while. Who actually, I believe,
that is a great name.
Worked a match with Buddy Wayne. Believe it or not, yeah, Fabuloso Blondie.
I totally believe that.
Awesome gimmick. So anyway.
So we had Ken Timms and Bill White versus Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe.
Awesome.
All right, first of all, what a badass babyface tag team that is.
Yeah.
Scary, scary men. Wahoo was so great in this match, and I don't even really know if I can explain why. He was a badass. He spent the entire time looking like he wanted to get it done and over with and get back to doing whatever it was that he had better stuff to do. But he put a guy in a chin lock, and without even looking at his corner, he reached over his head to tag Briscoe in. He was chopping the fuck out of guys. He put one of them in a sleeper, and was almost a finish, and almost a finish, and almost a finish, but that guy tagged out, and so the other guy came in the ropes. Wahoo immediately grabbed another sleeper, just trying to get an end here, and so that guy got the ropes and got to his feet, and Wahoo put him in a sleeper a third time. I was sure that was going to be the finish, but they kept wrestling for a while. They had a chop fest. One of these men thought he could exchange chops with Wahoo McDaniel and get away with it. He was sorely mistaken. Literally, he was sore. And finally, Wahoo hit a suplex and won. I enjoyed this way, way, way too much.
This is a fabulous little battle. Obviously, the baby faces were awesome. And Wahoo was so great. I need more Wahoo in my life.
Frank, he looked pissed off this evening. I don't know what. But there was a point where Briscoe was in the ring. And heels, I don't even think they were cheating. They were just winning on him. And Wahoo could take no more. He came in, beat up both their asses, threw Briscoe into his corner, climbed back out, and tagged himself in. He was taking no shit. This is great. And the show ended with the House of Humperdinck all took turns cutting promos. Humperdinck, actually, this is a great touch. Talking about how great Joe the Duke was, he showed the exact same footage earlier of when they hit Valiant with the stereo and then broke the stereo, but he didn't show any of that part. He just showed the part where Joe the Duke pinned him. That was great. And we had Leroy Brown talking about how tough he had to be from Chicago. He was awesome. Paul Jones was there. I honestly, I don't remember what he said. I just remember at the end, he popped back in and held up his belt. And Joe LeDuc was there, too. Mid-Atlantic in 82 was awesome.
Well, we're going to be watching more of it while we can. You'll be happy to know that I believe in a couple of weeks, Paul Jones is defending his title.
Oh, good.
Against Jack Briscoe. And this ain't Raw. That's all I got to say about that. All right, everybody. We got a song to play here. This is a... I actually don't even know if this was emailed to me. Vinny just emailed it to me. Do you remember who made this, Vinny?
Let me look it up. I can find out.
I believe it's on Twitter.
He made the song and announced it via Twitter, and because it has my name, I saw it.
Everybody, if you make a song, make sure that you send it to me in MP3 format. Send it to Brian@WrestlingObserver.com, obviously, and I will try to play them here on the show. If they pass the test, which is you actually get it to me via email in MP3 format. That's pretty much the test.
This is Phil Austin.
Phil Austin. All right, let's play this here song.
Devon in the ring. He called out Garrett. He was Garrett and eliminated him for the Battle Royal last week. So here's what happened. They wrestled for a few minutes. Robbie E and Robbie T attacked them. And the baby faces worked together to fight them off and clear the ring, and then they hugged. The best performer in this segment was, in fact, Joe Park Esquire. Holy Christ, he was good. All show. Because, you see, Devo was cutting a promo where he vowed to be fighting champion for all the people. And he got the, would the automatic applause for this line. And they cut to Joe Park. They didn't identify him. They did not show him. I don't think at any point in the show, this showed him the crowd as Devon vowed to fight for all the people. And Joe Park Esquire quietly, silently mouthed the word. Yes. He was all show. Because, you see, Devon was cutting a promo where he vowed to be fighting champion for all the people. And he got the, everyone did the automatic applause for this line. And they cut to Joe Park. They didn't identify him. They did not show him. I don't think at any point in the show, this showed him the crowd as Devon vowed to fight for all the people. And Joe Park Esquire quietly, silently mouthed the word. Yes. He was Devon in the ring. He called out Garrett. Because Garrett had eliminated him for the Battle Royal last week. So here's what happened. They wrestled for a few minutes. Robbie E and Robbie T attacked them. And the babyfaces worked together to fight them off and clear the ring, and then they hugged. The best performer in this segment was, in fact, Joe Park Esquire. Holy Christ, he was good. Awestruck by the noble claims of Devon here to fight for the people. Yes. And by the way, as an update, Devon in the ring, he called out Garrett. Because Garrett had a little...
Yeah!
That's the end. Oh, my God. That's a good one.
That's a winner.
That is a winner. All right, y'all. It is just about time for us to wrap it up. I've got to read this here, which is not put through Songify. It's from Ed. I can't even speak right now without hearing my voice songified. Ed wants
just
to
sing it.
Ed wants to say, Vinny, Whitney, Granny, the Empire, and Brian, I'm sending a shout out to let everyone know there is still time for them to get their ass to Vegas for the convention in July, and to tell you what you'll be missing if you don't. I cannot believe it's been 6 years since I bought you and Vinny's friendship.
That's true.
Anyway, here's what's going on in the desert this year. I'm attempting to read this the best I can, everybody. He wrote, here's what's going on in the desert, but I presume he meant the desert.
I don't know. It's Ed.
It is Ed. Thursday, we're meeting at Samba's at the Mirage for Brazilian barbecue. Then we're splitting into two groups. One is going to the Beatles' Love. The other is more than likely going to see Ka at the MGM. Friday has all kinds of things going. My co-host, The Peach Machine, will be competing in the Grappler's Quest at 11 p.m. or 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. I thought that was Saturday, but he's saying it's Friday. Then we will have our big dinner and buffet, and info on how to attend will be at the end of the shout-out. Also want to add that this year we have some special guests will be joining us. Our late friend Rami's sister, Maxie, and three other members of the family will be there in his honor. From there, we head to the suite party. I want to thank everyone that pitched in for the suite. Funny, no one from the website pitched in, but I won't name names. Saturday just got bigger, as not only will we have our pool party, but someone had the idea to have a barbecue, and I've been told this event will be called Whitney's and Barbara's Boys Drool and Girls Rule Pool and Barbecue Party. He actually wrote droll.
I can't be droll.
There's two O's, not two L's. This will be the same place as the sweet party, so yeah, Brian, you can still pitch in. So can anyone else who would like to. It's in UFC time. And of course, we meet at Dick's Last Resort and take over the patio and go crazy. Sunday, those still there are going to see the Tournament of Kings at Excalibur. And either before or after, we are hitting the Stratosphere to get on rides 109 stories in the air. I might also throw the Peach Machine off the top, so please don't miss. Other things I look forward to is meeting the Enigma that is Anchor and giving a Mega Powers handshake to Thrashard. Oh, and there might also be a...
Thrashard is going?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
I met Thrashard. He's actually awesome.
I totally believe you.
He'll be your best friend. There might also be a fist fight as Alex Goff and Rodney battle it out to see who gets to be the... anyway. Ed, please.
There's room for both of you.
Here is dinner info. Friday night, July 6th, 2012. Private banquet room buffet dinner is now official. $57 is the price per person. Dinner, banquet room rental, tax tip, and $2 to cover incoming PayPal fees. Needs to be sent via PayPal to sirhailiot@yahoo.com. That is, get ready, sirjailiot@yahoo.com. Please include your board name on the subject line so we can keep track. The maximum the room holds is 50. It's first come, first paid, first reserved. We need payments now by June 15th. That is the new cutoff date. So if you've not got your payment in, June 15th is the date. Price includes the private banquet room from 6 to 9 p.m., dinner buffet served from 6:15 to 7:30, and a 900-square-foot party suite booked at 9 p.m. at a secret location to the south end of the strip, behind Hooters Hotel and Casino, that is being paid for by private donations, which can be made via PayPal to Cosmo, C-O-S-M-O, underscore cutie, @hotmail.com. And for info, you can see the thread in the get-together section of the board, our Facebook page, F4W Wrestling Observer Vegas Convention 2012, or contact me at F4WFan@hotmail.com. And believe it or not, he misspelled his own email address.
Oh, I believe you.
I have fixed it for everybody. F4WFan@hotmail.com. So if you are listening right now to this free show and you want to join us in Vegas, rewind all that. Get all the info. And if you want more, F4WFan@hotmail.com is the email address to email Ed. So I was trying to get 100 this year. I don't think I'm going to make it because I did a poorer job of promotion than I had anticipated. But I still think it's going to be an awesome convention this year. And next year, for sure, we're going to get 100. And hey, there's still time. We may get 100 this year. So check it out, everybody. That is over the July 4th weekend. July 6th is the big Friday night private banquet room buffet dinner. So we still have some slots left if you want to take part in that. So check that out and join us. So anyway, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today, but I'm going to be back tomorrow. We got tons of shows this week. Figure Four, Observers coming out as well. Back issue of The Observer. So much stuff. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.